welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Dr. Lara Greaves from the University of Auckland this morning. Kia ora, Lara. How are you doing?
Morena. I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you. It is Waitangi weekend this coming weekend. It's going to be very different to, any Waitangi that we've seen in recent times, including the last two sort of pandemic-y Waitangis, I guess you could say. There aren't going to be any celebrations at the treaty grounds. That's going to be really significant. What's the conversations around this? What's been happening and what can we expect to see?
I think this is a really interesting enactment of the idea that tikanga evolves, because we've seen during the pandemic that a lot of Māori leaders, you know, iwi, hapū, have said tikanga evolves and this is part of it. And so that's going to be really interesting to see what happens at Waitangi Day this time round. We've seen the Prime Minister and Governor General, Dame Cindy Kiro, get pinged on a flight because they were a close contact of a COVID case when they were flying up north to go to film for Waitangi Day.
Mm.
So we've kind of seen that almost as a preview that we know that they filmed something up there. And this is also a really, because it's been quite an interesting and significant time for Ngāpuhi with Dame Cindy Kiro being the Governor General. And so it was one of those things where I think a lot of us were looking forward to seeing her kind of at Waitangi as someone who, with that whakapapa, who's now in that role. So that's a really shame to not see, but I guess it is just going to be this new type of Waitangi Day, it being online. I'm sure it's one of those things that Joe Moyer from Newsroom and others have sort of talked about and written about, whether it's going to get really as much attention for Māori issues as normal is something that's kind of remains to be seen. And so I'm kind of going to be watching to see what the National Party does. Are National going to announce a policy? Will National under Luxon, which has kind of been rebranded, new identity, will they kind of take a step back? What's National going to do in this space? Because it really does have the potential to be quite a sort of Waitangi Day that a lot of like the mainstream press overlooks, and then we don't get that attention for Māori issues, or potentially one where we do see this new renewal of views and positioning from National.
Last year, it feels like a long time ago now, but there was quite a lot of fallout from Judith Collins's calls about women on the Pai Pai and other discussions that were had around that. That's something that's been sort of well and truly, I guess, moved on from in the conversation now. But it is interesting, I think, as you point out, to reflect on just some massive changes that have happened in National in the last 12 months. What are you expecting we might see from them?
I'm really happy we don't have to have those discussions again, because I really do fundamentally think that the place of wahine, like on the Pai Pai, all of that needs to happen within hapū, within marae, and Māori to actually self-determine that themselves, and local Māori to have their own tikanga and kawa, and for them to figure it out for themselves. And the government, anyone external, National, anyone like that, putting pressure on them to change is not really a good pathway or a good partnership. So I'm really happy that we haven't had to keep having that discussion in the sort of mainstream discourse this year round. So, I mean, that's a real positive of not necessarily having those commemorations, and then also now Luxon being leader. And so I think from Luxon, what we've seen so far has been that kind of more centre-right, that more soft-right. We've seen them come out in the last few days to talking about National how their focus is going to be around poverty a bit more, and the fact that he kind of likes the idea of a well-being budget. So we're seeing that softening of National, that pivot towards centre voters. And so that's, really what I'm watching to see if they do anything special or specific for this Waitangi Day to try to signal that they're open to listening to Māori, having conversations with Māori, and open to trying to get some Māori voters.
Well, keeping it on COVID for a little bit, university is heading back pretty soon, next month, and it's going to be, again, a bit of a moving feast of what's happening and how students are able to access their education. What is, I guess, some of the conversations as an educator that you've been part of for handling this year as it's kind of sort of set out so far?
So I've been quite fortunate as someone with a bit of teaching buyout to not be teaching this semester, and my heart really goes out to all of the academics that are working quite hard to figure out how to teach their courses in a way that's going to sort of uphold their personal safety and the safety of their whānau. And a lot of them also have, are immune compromised or older, so they are a little bit concerned. And also, my heart goes out to students as well. It's not necessarily the sort of the real issue here is it's like we all know that teaching and learning in person is great. And all of the academics would love to be in person. That's something that we love about our job and have signed up for. And AUSA and others have said that the students would love to be in person.
Mm.
But it really is a matter of seeing what the institution will do over these next 6 months and how there are differences in different institutions. I'm actually a student at AUT in Te Reo Māori this coming semester, and that's another one where every institution has slightly different roles.
Mm.
And it's really tricky when, and we talked about this previously last year, where support for students hasn't been particularly forthcoming.
Yeah.
And the support for students along the way was a real way to build trust between the university and students, and of course then the university and staff. And that trust isn't necessarily built or there, and so then that's where it does feel like a very legitimate anxiety as to whether the university will do what's best for people's personal safety.
Mm.
And so that, I think, is something that I guess we're going to see what happens there. But I think, yeah, it's very strange to me having some students that are a couple of years into their degree now and they've just never had that normal classroom experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tricky, really tricky time. So very much thinking of anybody heading back into it this semester. I did want to get your thoughts on what's been happening. I guess the big media story this week has been Charlotte Ballas, the pregnant New Zealand journalist who has been trying to get a spot in MIQ. She's now been given a spot, but it was quite a struggle. And there was a lot of coverage of that. And now we're seeing quite a lot of, I guess, counter coverage that's been criticising her, I guess, her comments that she turned to the Taliban for some support. There's been a lot of commentary that undermines the position of Afghani women in Afghanistan who are having to live in that regime at the moment. What's your take on it? What's been some of the things you've taken away from the discourse this week?
Yes, so I definitely agree on like an intersectional feminist lens on Charlotte Ballas's situation. I think that everyone individually does really understand that you would want to return home in your pregnancy and return home to give birth, I think, regardless of where you are. And I think people individually have sympathy for her.
Mm.
But I think that's where we do want to apply that intersectional feminist lens. We saw Moose Gaan, Summer Crandy, and others, a former Afghani broadcaster, New Zealand woman, come out and talk about the way that this has been framed and kind of have a letter in reply to Charlotte Ballas. And I think that those perspectives are really important to look at, because that is really one take on this, that she has sort of centred herself and centred her own situation. And when you look at, firstly, the plight of Afghani women when it comes to childbirth and other feminist and gender-related issues, that wasn't necessarily the best way to go about that was sensitive to them. And then also when you look at it in terms of her individual rights versus the broader collective good, we saw people like Professor Michael Baker and Mark Dawler, this great journalist for Newsroom, who's done great COVID coverage, sort of come back and say, well, look, at the individual level, sympathise, but at that collective level, MIQ is still working. And what it comes back to there as well is, if we did just kind of let go the borders at this point, other pregnant women would be at risk. Like tens of thousands of pregnant people in Aotearoa at the moment would be at risk because of MIQ going. So it's that individual balancing of rights versus collective balancing of rights. But ultimately, an individual story is a very convincing thing, and a great anecdote and a great story and a great face and a name to something really does get the public going. And I'm sure there's been lots of discussions about this around various dining room kitchen tables around the country. So I really ultimately don't know what her goals were for this. I wondered if she, because it was a very, if you look at it from a PR perspective, it was a very slick effort. She managed to position stories everywhere all around the world. And I do wonder if she's returning to start up some kind of PR agency.
It'll be interesting to see what happens there. But thank you very much for your time this morning, Dr. Lara Greaves. It's always awesome to have you on the show. We'll talk to you in a few weeks' time. Have a nice long weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Dr.